All right. Welcome back to The Blast with Dr. Dan, putting the world on blast. Like, I don't know, we're having a blast. It seemed like it had that dual, you know, so we're going to roll with it. Essentially, I have comedians on here. Sometimes it's two comedians, sometimes it's one comedian. And we roll through the news and politics unabashedly about politics and things that maybe you don't care about, but I don't know, we do. So this week, it's Robert Barill. Barill?
Yep.
Barill again.
Nailed
it. Just told me he's French.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think originally the pronunciation was Barry, because you don't pronounce the L without the E at the end of it. But yeah, so I'm French by nature. Yep.
French by nature.
And genetically, I suppose, too, but also by nature.
Well, my daughter's in Bordeaux. My last name's French. My daughter was born on Bastille Day. So in theory, I've got connections.
You're probably just chomping at the bit for that Joaquin Phoenix Napoleon movie, huh? That'll be our St. Patrick's Day. Yep.
A while back, I deep dove on Napoleon because I got so interested in it. I was turning it into kind of stuff for a one-person show.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. So much going on with that guy.
I have a little bit of catch up because I saw Oppenheimer and I got the book. So that's going to be probably the next 2 months for me is like doing the deep dive on Oppenheimer. But then, because Napoleon, you never really hear about him. It's all Hitler. It's all Stalin, Mao, maybe. They kind of just clog up the dictator lane or the emperor lane where you're like, oh, yeah, let me check in on that little fella that made some waves in the 1800s.
It's fascinating. Like when you actually go in and do the research on that guy. Like he wasn't exactly a hated dictator.
You know, no,
he took over from, you know, in between kind of the French Revolution. You know, once they killed off the aristocracy, they tried to get a republic going and he was kind of in the way. And sort of they kind of went back and forth a long time. And then his son, his grandson, Napoleon III, was the last one to grab a little bit of emperor power.
Okay.
And yeah, he wasn't even French.
Oh, really? See, I've only obvious stuff that's probably not even true yet because I haven't done the dive. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
And so Josephine, right? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
No, I was just going to say, I'm aware of Josephine and Waterloo and Elba and just like the extreme cliff notes. And the fact that he wasn't really all that short, it was just like the British shitting on him. And then that kind of took hold. But
right. And they're political cartoons, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look at the power of comedy. We redefined a dictator for all time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we made him short and angry.
Yeah. Like imagine 200 years down the line, if it's just and there would be some cosmic justice to it. But if like the only depiction or version of Hitler that people saw was Mel Brooks's Springtime for Hitler, this flamboyant effete guy.
Yeah, we can suck dictators over into comedy. I had this bit about comedy is always more powerful than drama and tragedy. I don't care what you've got, or chaos or crisis or war. Like think of Hitler at the Nuremberg rallies doing, you know, this big, you know, emotional rally for all his Nazis. Everybody's cheering, and then he gets off the stage and he drives away on a Segway.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Completely loses all the gravitas.
Yeah,
comedy win.
Yeah. That was Mel Brooks's whole thing with even doing it is getting them to laugh at him. Because yeah, if you do the serious thing, then if anything, it almost venerates him even more. It almost dips into Riefenstahl territory where it's like triumph of the will, and then you have stuff that's like going on with Putin and Russia, where Republicans can't suck up to the guy enough. And it was like, weren't you the anti-Russia? Like, is this what you want? Biden tries to forgive student loans and you call him a dictator or,
yes,
you know, emperor. And then you have like the actual dictator. You're like, man, if only we could have a leader like him. You're like, oh, is that what it would take if Putin forgives Russian students debt? They'll be like, okay, you know what? Let's fund Ukraine now. This guy's just handing out education that we can't stand for that. Give Zelensky some more drones.
Yeah. And I always, again, I mix my worlds together and I probably shouldn't do as much as I do, but the comedy world and the rhetoric world, that's essentially because everybody that's conservative is really a story rhetorician. Like, they just believe the stories. They don't care about the facts or the logic or the contradictions within it.
Yeah.
What they care about is the story character. And the strong man character, whether it's an illusion or not, they love that strong daddy, you know, iron fist cleaning up the family character. And they don't care who plays it.
Yeah, because there's no room for nuance there. It's sort of like the people's history of the United States versus just like the great man theory, because it makes our job easier, where it's like, well, I'm never going to be Lincoln. And like, well, it wasn't just Lincoln, or like, it wasn't just Martin Luther King Jr. But in perpetuating that, then if anything, it discourages mass movements and stuff, because it's like, no, it's great men. We're not great men. We might be okay. We don't beat our wives. We don't, whatever. We're okay. We're not great. And then when you look back, you just remember the Obama. You don't remember everybody that voted for him. You remember FDR, not like how terrible the situation was and everything. And certainly they were skilled, but the idea of like, it just goes from great man to great man to great man is such an oversimplification that they can.
Right. But again, like when you add logic to it and you take the story apart, you're like, there's all this. Nobody wants to hear that explanation. And you hit it right on the head. Like, you know, Maverick was the biggest movie of the year. Barbie is even Great Woman. You know, it's one great figure fits in a story. It doesn't fit with, even like the crowdness of Marvel, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I haven't seen Oppenheimer, but was he great man or conflicted man who finally did something great?
He definitely thought, well, I think he kind of got off on the confliction, and they sort of addressed that in the movie. I really liked it because you get the sense that even he really didn't know what he wanted. Like, he wanted to be in charge and he wanted it to work. And I don't think the ramifications of it even occurred to him, because he was so focused on, I want to be the bomb guy. I think it was important that the test worked for him. And then later on, after the government used it, because of course it was going to use it, he kind of wanted it both ways. And the movie does a good job of kind of calling him to task for it too, where he was like, well, I learned that if, you know, the government's going to use any weapon you give it, for the most part, like, you didn't factor that in at all. You didn't think.
Come on.
Because in his justification, it was like, well, we can't let the Nazis get it first. And then by the time the Nazis weren't even in it, by the time we used it. So even that justification fell flat. But then I think he also sort of wanted to be the guy with the blood on his hands and the, what have I done? But he wanted it both ways. He wanted to be the bomb guy. And then when it was used, he wanted to be the, oh, but why did we have to use the bomb guy? And it was like, well, you know.
Right. Well, and that again, like, if you look at the evolution of storytelling, if you can just keep people in the frame of story and be like, well, evolution of storytelling now, like, you can't have an unconflicted hero. Like, it's just too simple for most of the modern audience. Like, you have to see some, you know, some complication within the character, and they drag it all the way up to where it's almost all complication, you know, and then a little bit of saving grace. And we seem to be fine with that, like the Breaking Bads and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, but like in the real world, and that's kind of what's happened with Trump. He's almost all complication, but he mouths a few things that are kind of saving grace, nationalist, recognizable, great man or story like character.
He won't touch the safety net, Medicare, Medicaid. And you're like, oh, okay, well, so then it's like, all right, well, I mean, the shift from the Republican Party from Reagan to Trump is, since it's become that cult of personality, and now policies, who needs a policy? Right. And then you look at some of that stuff where, like, they were completely free trade, neoliberal foreign policy.
But again, you're logicking, you're rational. Like, I always tell people in my course about like how to convert a conservative, I'm like, just stop talking logic. I don't want to hear any logic coming out of your mouth, because you're going to lose. But I want to hear story. Like, the Jesus story is a great man story. You know, he had a little bit of complicated because his dad was involved too. You know, so he didn't get the full cred, but it's the same story.
Yeah,
you know, and if you want to compete with a great man story, well, then go in and, you know, pull out the rug underneath the great manness, which is what they keep trying with Trump, but they're doing it the wrong way. Like, you know, if he was something that was clearly a villain to the right, like if he was gay, if he was trans, like any of those things, if he was a different color,
Yeah.
You know, any of that kind of stuff, you could complicate him, but it's really hard to do when he's just a big white man with a big mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we talked about last time, I think too, when you mentioned like the mythos thing where it's like, he's already done such a great job of casting himself as fighter, warrior, savior, that for those people that you can't reach with facts and logic and reason, there's no, and the fact that Republicans are still like, well, he's indicted four times now. He's going to fuck like the Nikki Haley's, the Tim Scott's, like, they're either completely delusional or they're playing for vice president in this, you know, the future, let's hang this person, you know? And so it's, no one's challenging him. I am looking forward to the debate because I do think that if he does debate, well, either even if he doesn't debate, Chris Christie's going to go up there.
Yeah, Christie's
going to go hard at him. And then he puts everybody else in the position of having to defend him. And then it's like, well, why are you even running? Because all you're doing up there is defending the guy from Chris Christie. So why?
Yeah, if you can get somebody in to do slander on Trump mm-hmm. in prime time, yeah. you might get a little story traction.
Yeah, you know? I think if anyone, I doubt he's got a chance, but at least Christie's like the only one in that lane of, and he's built a nice little narrative for himself too. I came out and supported him right away. I worked on the transition team for him from Obama. I clashed with the Kushners. January 6th happened. I realized he wasn't. So now I've learned my lesson and yeah. I still have the conservative principles. Fool me once, Trump, but you're not going to fool me again. And I'm not saying that people buy it necessarily, but you do see that like, okay, you need like an arc, a story versus just, you know, policies, the policy differential, which no one cares about.
Right. Now, Christie's playing the story narrative of the contrite sinner, you know, mm-hmm. the saved sinner, which plays really well with that audience. If you can get in there, if you can wedge yourself in enough, and, you know, again, you've got to turn Trump somehow from the superhero into some kind of middling, you know, person in the middle. And that wedge might work. I mean, Pence is trying the same strategy. About, yeah. you know, the saved sinner. Yes, I believed and we did a lot of good work, but then he went too far and I had to, you know, slightly balk.
Actually, it was funny because like, it wasn't even like he had to use power. There was no power. Like you didn't have the power. So his big act of rebellion was not using power he didn't have to stop an election that he couldn't.
Yeah, but they've learned that, again, sort of the mob boss tactics, like if you can get it into the courts,
yeah,
then power shifts everywhere. Like the differential power is completely different inside the court. So if you can get it into the mm-hmm. court,
yeah,
you know, and start playing court games with it, then you gain new power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that was really the whole argument. It's like, hey, Trump or Pence, just send it back to the states and watch everything become a shit show. And then we're going to go into the courts and we're pretty good at, you know, dodging and, you know, shaping the courts.
And it seems like the Georgia indictments, because it's the RICO stuff. So that's exactly the kind of thing they're talking about, is the whole strategy, basically, of getting, you know, and then who was involved and getting it by the slate of electors and that whole thing. And how, I guess, Trump's defense is just like, well, the lawyers were, it's like, yeah, the lawyer that told you what you wanted to hear after the other 25 quit.
Well, the nice thing about the RICO is that has developed within the court system over 50, 75 years of dealing with the mob. They know how to deal with all those tactics.
Yeah.
Right. They know everything that's coming. They know every piece of argument, every piece of delay. And so he's in a new ball game right now where he can't control that court.
And it isn't even like smart. Like they have him dead to rights. Like, hey, just find me 11,000 votes. Wink, wink. Which is also funny that he's a narcissist, but at the same time only wanted one more vote.
Right.
And Biden, a comic buddy of mine posted a tweet about that too. His name is Derek Henkels. I want to give him credit, but that didn't even occur to me. And that's one of those things where I'm like, oh, how did I miss that? But it's just so funny that like, I don't want to blow Biden out of the water. Just one vote, a gentleman's, you know, I don't want to make him look bad. Let's just get one more. Let's just get, find one more vote than what I need to be the winner.
So I saw something on your feed where somebody was praising you or written you up as one of the promising new political comedians on the scene. So talk about that a little bit. Are you out in the clubs doing politics? Are you doing social issue stuff? What are you doing?
Both. I think politics. I mean, it's not soapboxy. It's not going up there. I open with a pretty good chunk on Biden. I mentioned the cocaine at the White House. I mentioned RFK Jr. And so I start by prodding the left a little bit. And then from there, I kind of go back and forth and I don't do anything too overt. But then it's structured in a way where I don't think I'm hammering one side for too long without going back to the other side. Because then I mentioned the right trying to attack Biden for being woke. And that kind of gets me into this LGBTQ AI bit. But then I focus on the fact that A stands for asexual. And then it's like, well, what are we even doing here? Like, that's the sexual identity group. Like, what's... So then I kind of make fun of that, not in a way that's that I feel like is punching down or anything, but just the inherent nature of asexuals within a sexual identity group. And so I feel like everyone laughs at that, but the right can really sort of enjoy that. And then I feel like I built up enough goodwill with the Biden and the asexual stuff. Then I kind of pivot more to making fun of the laws that are going on in Florida, the Don't Say Gay bill, the banning the books. And I find an angle on that where it's just like, we can all agree this is pretty ridiculous. But then it's, I feel like the left and even the right a little bit, because not all Republicans are for that stuff. They're fiscally conservative, they're isolationist, they're whatever. So it's a matter of just kind of cherry picking particular issues and putting a little bit of a spin on it where I can get most people on board with me. And then riding that out for a while before doing it again on the other side. So it is politics, but I don't think I'm being soapboxy about it. I'm not saying I'm right, you're wrong. I'm saying I think we can all agree this is wrong. And it seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah. So you're finding techniques that let you do that material without instantly triggering, you know, the triggerables out there. Like I've done that before with one of the things I do when I do political stuff is, again, sort of going back and forth on both sides, but it's like hypotheticals, right? So you say like this and this and this is fine, right? So like who wants to build a wall? Okay.
Yeah.
And some people still, I want to build a wall. Okay, great. How high is the wall? Like 100, is 100 feet okay? Mm-hmm. Like a Capitol wall with, can we put armed guards on the wall to pick people off if they're trying to get over the wall? Like, are you okay with? To get them to think within the broader context of the idea of what is a barrier and what's acceptable. Like, can we electrify the wall?
Yeah.
You know, do you want to, and can we take videos of that so it gets triggered and you see a Guatemalan family, fry? Is that cool?
Yeah.
Would you watch that feed? We'd probably watch that feed.
Yeah.
Is that what you want?
Yeah.
And I think that hypotheticalness gets people to broaden it into a meta issue instead of a, lockdown. I've only thought about it in this narrow bandwidth issue, which is what comedy's great at. Take them out of that bandwidth a little bit and they don't know how to locate themselves for a little while so you can do some cool work.
Yeah, or just kind of like trying to, Ben Washburn had a good line about it. I think he just said in conversation or something about like trying to do political or topical stuff and bring people from the other side or like factor in their opinions where it's like, we need to respect each other's fears, right? Like I get, if you're on the right, you fear crime, you fear all this job displacement, all this other kind of stuff where it's like, you have to acknowledge that. And so when you're doing jokes about it, I think you need to kind of be respectful for some of the concerns that the other side has. And that's why, at least when I do it, I try to pick particular issues, whether it's the Michelangelo's David statue being considered pornographic or some other stuff where it's like, okay, like maybe I am targeting probably religious conservatives that would see something like that as pornographic, but at a comedy club, at a bar, even if it's in Wisconsin or Iowa, like some red state, like if you're an adult at a bar drinking, you're probably okay with some pornography jokes, some like anti-religious stuff. Cause I'm not doing the material in church. Then I would imagine it would go quite poorly. Although that would be a fun idea for a special, is me just bombing in a church for an hour.
But maybe not call it bombing in a church. Maybe.
No, probably not. No, that's historically, that would, that might trigger some people, and rightfully so. But I'd find a sacrifice, maybe some sort of sacrifice angle for it.
Jesus isn't the only one who died up here.
I was about to say, or dying for your sins. And then.
All right, I'm going to give you a topic off the news, and let's see what we can come up with in the moment. You saw this, but there's a German supermarket giant called, what's it called, Aldi's brand.
Oh, yes.
They just bought 400 Winn-Dixies in the South. So the Germans are taking over the Southern supply chain. Like, you know, 100 years late, but they finally, you know, got in and took out the American supply chain.
Are there any Polish supermarkets that should be on watch right now? Are there any, or probably in Chicago, some sausage places that need to be at red alert?
Yeah. How are we going to stop this? Like, once they, you know, they've taken Winn-Dixie, what's next?
I was about to say, I'm French. Like, this is not boding well for any cafes or something in the, not that there's a lot in the middle of the country, but. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, it's, I feel like Germany, they're ready to make their move now. They've been laying low for a while. They nixed the.
They're coming up through capitalism. They're coming up through the guts of capitalism this time to tentacle their way into the body of America.
Yeah, well, that is kind of what they did economically, right? Over in Europe with the EU, as they kind of became the economic powerhouse. And then instead of like, I mean, this isn't funny, this isn't a bit, but like, it's sort of just like how they recalibrated from like, well, we don't need to militarily take over. We can just, because they have such an industrial base, we can just decide what strings we want to attach to all the money we give out. And then the countries have to play ball with us if they want bailouts, if they want.
Well, that's America. America did the same thing, right?
Yeah.
That's how we, you know, gotten bases everywhere. It's how we've gotten our culture everywhere is through financial imperialism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's, you can't fault Germany for that.
Yeah. Do a bit about that. Financial imperialism.
You know, if you have to, you know, if you're going to be imperialistic, I think you want the economic imperialism, right?
It's a softer. Yeah. It's exactly. A softer takeover.
Yeah, for sure.
But the German and Winn-Dixie, that fits in there perfectly of financial imperialism coming back around. Like it just they've circled us. They've snuck around the back and they've finally found the open door, you know, into the system.
I had no idea Aldi was German. I didn't know. Whoever is in charge of branding and marketing at Aldi, I think has done a pretty good job of fending off the German ties or the German, like, just imagine a board meeting where it's like, they're working on slogans or something. And, instead of Black Friday, it's like, Blitzkrieg Friday. Like, no, we're not calling it that. That's not, stop it, guys.
Well, Kroger sounds German. I'm looking it up right
Kroger
now.
Kroger for sure does. Yeah, that definitely.
Like, that's Jewish German, or is it just straight up?
That sounds Kruger. Like the name of a that could have been a general at a camp. Kroger. That's definitely.
Yeah, it's a variant of Kruger. Bernard Kroger in 1860 created it. Interesting. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
See, they've gotten our food.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
Fashion. Fashion, a lot of brown suits. Are they?
I can't see the Germans ever taking over fashion. Maybe, I guess, like, the Matrix was kind of the German look coming back in.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of, I don't even know what is the German fashion. Is it a lot of blacks, a lot of leather,
a lot of black leather.
Leather. Okay, well, leather, you can make a comeback with leather. Yeah. I mean, Nazism's made a comeback in the country. I feel like German fashion is more like, that's probably safe if Nazism can come back.
Okay, so that's pretty good, right? So what are the products going to be at the new German Southern?
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, let's see.
Some kind of corn dog with, you can bludgeon somebody with a corn dog. Is that what it is? Bludgeon-sized corn dogs.
Man. Yeah. Let's see. I don't know. Probably. Let's see. Formerly Polish sausage. formerly Polish sausages.
We have to get rid of sauerkraut. We don't want to hear that word "fraut" in our
occupied French fries, maybe. Yeah, there's probably a few hallmarks of the new German cuisine. A lot of beer, probably. I think that might be the way to America's heart, as if it was the beer stuff. The Guinness isn't German. What's Guinness is Irish, right?
Guinness is Irish. Budweiser.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Budweiser. Although
we got ahead of that, though, with the whole trans thing. Now there's no way Germany wants to touch, like, open the Budweiser avenue into their economic imperialism that way.
Did it leak over to Budweiser, or was it just Bud Light, like, that just took the cultural hit?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because, like, obviously,
Budweiser's still manly, right? I think it's still pure.
Yeah. I did do a bit about how Bud Light sounds like how bros would refer to their friend that is transitioning into a woman. Like, this is my Bud Light, not full Bud. She's okay, not cool with everything, so not like but yeah, I wonder how much Bud, if it's just the Bud, because I know I did the Funny Bone in St. Louis, and up before that Bud Light was their number one seller, and now it's like it's so dumb. He's like, we can't even right? give it away. Like, it's not like your dick's gonna fall off or anything, like, who? But that's just how tribal it's. Kid Rock does one video where he cries and tries to shoot at it. And then it's like, well, I can't, I got to stick with my team.
Gayer with every sip, yeah. It's like, well, and that's what I was saying. Like, the story stuff, again, it's not logic. It's just staying it with some type of free villainized symbol. Mm-hmm. And it'll come down. Like, it'll fall. Like, Jericho's walls will come down if you spray paint rainbows on them.
Yeah.
Like, those symbols are so strong. The words are so strong. Those villainy words are so strong for the right. If you can just attach one tightly to something, it's like putting a, bomb, a plastic explosive on the side. It will bring it down, which is why I was saying, like, with Trump, I said this way back with George Bush, like, when Kerry was running against Bush, I was like, it was Kerry, right? Just make a poster with George Bush's face on it and underneath just the word gay.
Mm-hmm.
And you win.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're not looking at the logic of it. They're looking at the just big feeling, stamp of it.
I can't imagine, though, like, that to me, that seems like the problem with the Bud Light dilemma is it can only go the one way, where if conservatives or whatever, those insecure guys see you drinking Bud Light, they're like, oh, you support trans rights. But I can't imagine, especially on the left, where it just seems like it's craft beers and stuff, where it's almost like, hey, in solidarity, you want to drink the Bud? Like, no, I'm not drinking the Bud. I appreciate the sentiment. But, like, I doubt there were a lot of people that suddenly took up Bud Light as the protest drink, or, like, maybe tried it and were like, nah, I'm going to go back to my
crazy IPA. It's not crappy enough for the the Bohemians. Like, it's got to go down all the way to PBR or something like that for them to sort of dip down into the lower cultures products. Mm-hmm. Bud Light is clearly middle class product. So,
be interesting if it was PBR. I feel like PBR, they might have even gotten stronger with that based on their base. But yeah, Bud, I mean, more power to them for trying it. But with your base like that, it definitely seems like you're playing with fire a little bit.
Yeah, the question becomes, like, who made that decision and did not see this coming, like, at Bud Light? Like, what was the marketing team or the executive team that was like, I mean, if you did it purposely, you're shooting, a shot across the bow of the right, and you're at some kind of marketing structure underneath it to capitalize on that energy. Like, you
especially
had, like, you kind of owned an anti-Bud Light beer, But this just seemed like bad calculation to throw that kind of social.
Especially where, like, you're clearly not appealing to the other side anyway. Like, they would agree with, but your product isn't suddenly going to become appealing to them. So they could have had O.J. Simpson as a spokesperson and probably would have gone better, kill that thirst. Stab that thirst in the waiter it's been seeing for a while.
I would respect that level of capitalism appropriating social capital. you know, mm-hmm. of, yeah, just pull the villains up. Like, it was there once in a while. They did with, what's his name, Reggie Bush, who got the Heisman taken away from him at USC because he was paid to play. Oh, and okay. mm-hmm. who was it, Burger King or somebody had him on. It's like, we'll never take away your quarter, you know, carcinogenic burger, Reggie.
Yeah. yeah.
And I'm like, that was a villainy. Like, that is a sports villainy. And for a while, that was real. Like, people really were upset about what he did.
Which is,
but they just went back in like, nah, we're going to make fun of it now.
Yeah, especially, I mean, as far as NFL scandals go, like being compared to, who is it that like punched his girlfriend in the elevator, Ray Rice or somebody?
Ray Rice, yeah.
Yeah, or like Ray Lewis, like killed a guy. Like, he made a little money before he probably should have. Like, oh, woe is me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost the sweet spot for an athlete a little bit is like you get that controversial, you get the controversy, you get a little bit of an edge. But at the end of the day, it's not bad compared to all of the other scandals within the league.
All right, I'm just grabbing the first Fox story that I see. You ready?
Is this about Bud Light?
No, this is just okay. Random on their site right now. So actress apologizes for taking relationship with married man public. Do you know this story?
I do not know.
I don't know if you are a social media guy, but she posted, this was a woman, Taryn Manning, who... She was on Orange is the New Black. She's been kind of a side character, fairly prominent. But all she posted, I watched it today because my buddy Jason Galern here, who's, you talk about dark and like will go into anything. What a great writer and comic he is. But he had posted about it on his social. And so I went and looked at it. And it's her, she recorded a 3-minute video on Instagram where she's clearly drugged up. In some way or another, because she's slurry and in her car, you know, driving. And at one point, she's like, "I had to pull over because I didn't want to cause a major collision." But she starts it with, "I'm going down to Newport to buy a boat for this married guy that I've been seeing, and I licked his ass 3 nights in a row, and now his wife has found out."
Okay.
And she went into the whole. Why she licked his ass and what it was all about. And now she wants to buy him a boat, but his wife is back in the picture and it's complicating things.
That's is the married guy an actor or she's the actress and she's
the actress.
Okay. Weird. Oh, well, content, you know, I'm sure it's got views. That's definitely.
But she apologized.
She's buying him a boat.
For what?
She's buying him a boat?
She's buying him a boat. And she apologized today for posting this, for, you know, not for anything else, but for she shouldn't have posted this. She made a bad choice. I'm like, yeah, I think you were, you know, making a compromised cognitive choice at that moment. But it was just the crazy kind of matter of factness about the random things that she's throwing into this.
Well, I'm sure the last thing that the married guy thought was this public person would just throw all this out there on Instagram. Does it say what this, like, is this just a regular Joe with a family that, like, now it's like, hey, the gal from Orange is the New Black was licking your ass? Like, that's
a lot going on in these stories these days. So
Orange is the New Brown, apparently. Yeah, there's a lot of, a lot of twists and turns to this story.
Yeah, you have to look at that video after we get off. It's pretty funny. It's pretty intense.
That's, man. Did they find out who it is or did she leave it anonymous? And now people are like, who's this mystery ass that she's been licking?
The mystery ass. I don't know. I didn't dive deep. You know, I didn't go deep into the story.
That's her style. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if she revealed his identity or not, but yeah, everybody in the world should watch that video because it will teach you about the collision of public and private. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this new world that's grown up, this sort of private, you know, where
yeah.
It's completely public, but it's also completely private. And that's never really existed before. And when you see people just stomp on it so badly right there, it's just fascinating to watch.
Is Hunter Biden married right now? Is he a married guy? Because I feel like that might, yeah, probably not. I was going to say, because if it's Fox News, I'm sure that like that's the next story is it was like, no, he used to be married. And it's Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden.
All right. Yeah.
That would be a great collision. You know, that was the whole formula for writing for Letterman was to just take two stories that you would never put together at the last second, mash them up. He loved that structure.
I mean, he's Hunter. I mean, he's obviously going through a lot of stuff, but it's
Hunter,
funny because
he found her.
Yeah. he's almost like the Trump on the left where it almost doesn't matter what you could say about him. Cause like on the left, it's like, whatever, it's a family issue. I don't think they're blaming Biden for anything like that. And independents don't really care. And conservatives just love going at it. But it's also like, I mean, it's nice to kind of have that person on the left that you can just joke about like that. And Biden, there's a little bit, but he's also older. And then it's like, okay, well, is it really right to be making fun of some of this stuff? But with Hunter, it is kind of refreshing that there is that target on there where you can joke about him. And ultimately, he's probably going to be fine. So it's
he's the Billy Carter. He's the Billy Carter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
There's like always somebody in the sphere that you know you can pull up, and they're close enough.
Or maybe even Ted Kennedy. Like he doesn't have an office, but like the Ted Kennedy, basically, where there's a lot of tragedy in the family, and for whatever reason, this guy's the one that's untouched by it and, you know, seems to be thriving and maybe doesn't make the best choices and stuff, but you have more, seems like, you know, nobler members of the family that, aren't making it to a long life, and Teddy and Hunter are persevering.
Well, I suggest everybody go and watch that video. It's worth it. It is culturally significant, that video.
Well, we'll know who the guy is when the boat shows up at his house. I'm sure there's a wife who's like, was it you? You're always asking me to lick your ass. He's like, no, damn it, it's not. Oh, you think the orange is the new black lady? Would I, like she be interested in me at all? Let alone. And then the boat pulls up, and she's like, get out of this house. You're like, well, I'll be living
in
the boat.
Maybe he's like super boat guy. And he's like, it's not my ass. It's my aft. Use the right terminology if you're going to.
Well, if she does kick him out, now he can live in the boat, which is, you know, it's all right. That's yeah.
All right.
Listen, just tow this to the marina. I got to live in here for a while.
All right. Here's another one I saw that I thought was pretty funny. I'm just going to read the headline to you. This is from CNN. It's one of their kind of side, you know, sort of life interest stories that they pull out of Florida usually.
Oh boy.
61-year-old Florida man arrested. Okay.
Standard. Yep. Fine. Wouldn't even need to say the Florida part. Yep.
Right. After posing. Sure.
Okay. That's,
again, you can see this happening. As a veterinarian and operating on a pregnant chihuahua that later died.
I'm honestly surprised he didn't have sex with the chihuahua. That's the only part of it that surprises me of this
story.
It does
not say he did not have sex with the chihuahua.
That's true. That's true. I am extrapolating. We don't
know,
pregnant with what? We don't know what got that chihuahua pregnant.
That's right.
Was he covering his tracks? Because then he knows when the chihuahua delivers and it's this ungodly man-dog hybrid that the jig's going to be up.
That's one thing I really do like about clickbait. It lays so many pieces into the story that you cannot put together. And if you don't read the story, you would like be able to go into so many different directions that it almost forces you to read the story to shut down the meaning avenues.
I want to see the Curb Your Enthusiasm-ish scenario that led this guy to, or Seinfeldian scenario that led this guy to pretend to be a veterinarian, to operate on a chihuahua with no experience and can't not do it.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe trying to impress a girl. Like, you're like, well, I can't be a doctor, because then she's going to, you know what, a veterinarian, because the animals can't say that hurts or that's wrong or why are
I
you.
I can, if I kill a puppy, whatever. Like, it's,
yeah,
I can't do this on a woman. I can't be like, hey, I can, everybody get back. I'm here. Not like Ronnie Jack.
This isn't good for the United States' Chihuahua mortality rate. I will say that. That's definitely taken a hit.
All right, so I'm going to give you pieces of the story, and we'll see how it cleans itself up. So he was not a registered veterinarian. So, okay, we got that kind of in the posing as.
Always look up your vet, people.
He was a registered pet groomer.
That's not enough. That's haircuts, not enough. I don't go to a barber for a kidney transplant.
This was a home visit. Like, this was a,
he came to the house. Yes. Oh man, the groomer did.
Yes, the groomer came to the house.
It was a good looking corpse, I bet, though. Like the Chihuahua died, but I bet it looked great. Oh, exactly.
The bow. Yeah. She looked better than she did when she was alive.
Open casket.
$600 he charged for the procedure.
Seems like it'd be steep. I don't know what the going rate is for. He was just going to help the Chihuahua deliver? Or what was, does it say?
It doesn't say. Like, there are missing stories in the journalism. Like, they have not sent their best.
Listen, we understand you're covering the shelling in Kyiv, but we got a Chihuahua that we need you to look into.
And it turns out that she died. Sugar is the name of the dog. Sugar.
Aww,
yeah. So Sugar died from an infection because he sewed her up with string.
So close. He almost got it right. That's the real tragedy, is that he bluffed his way through it and nearly did it, and then used string.
Yeah. Right. I'm trying to see if the puppies made it. It doesn't say. I got to look that. Oh no, a stillborn puppy. So the puppy didn't make it either.
Well, depending on how far the pro-life laws are in Florida, this guy might end up going to prison, I think, because that was a life, right? That's, I mean, it's two puppies. It's not a baby pup, or it's two dogs. If it's, you know, if it could bark at, or if it could had paws at 6 weeks, then I think you can definitely charge this guy with.
That's definitely a heartbeat state, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tail starts wagging at conception, I think. So this is definitely a dog murderer.
Osvaldo Sanchez. So if you see that name at your vet's office, do not leave your Chihuahua.
Or maybe this is what happened. It was supposed to be a dog abortion, and because they've made it illegal in Florida, she had to go black market with the groomer. This guy doesn't know what he's doing, and now a poor pregnant dog has lost its life because the lady dogs have lost their rights in Florida.
Once again, it comes back to DeSantis and his police state. Look what you've done. Like, we should like post pictures of look what happened to Sugar because of your authoritarian tactics.
They have to drive their dogs to North Carolina to get the dog abortion. That's 7 weeks, right? So you better know right away, because the 1 week for a dog is 7 weeks, right? So you got to get to North Carolina pretty early, I would imagine.
Surely this is sketchable. Surely this has turned into a, like, you can make a sketch about the dog, and like, you like, well, we're gonna have to, no, you can't save that dog.
That's a really good dark sketch, or like a Curb kind of plot or something. Like, you don't want your dog to be pregnant because the dog can't handle it, but then there's no dog abortion place in your state, so they have to
and was it rape or incest, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah,
they don't talk about the father at all in this story.
No we don't know what happened to that Chihuahua.
I like it. Let's lay that off on your sketch. All right. Last one here.
We should have saved that one for the end. That one definitely should have. Yeah.
But I love this story too. The Blindside guy.
Oh, I did hear about this. Yeah.
That, yeah, they completely milked him out of all the money, cheated him out of all the money, never adopted him, just have a conservatorship and took all the money from the all the proceeds and have been living like this crazy lavish lifestyle.
Horrible. I mean, I did think it was a little extreme where some people are like calling for Sandra Bullock to lose her Oscar. So like, well, that's a completely different issue. That's for a performance. I don't think, well, I mean, I think it's terrible, but I don't think that's Sandra's fault. I mean, that's,
I hadn't heard that. That's pretty.
Yeah. There were some, well, and I don't know how legit that is. But you know how the internet is. They just take one person or like three people say it. And now like, well, there are calls like, okay, but it's not the Hollywood Foreign Press or anyone that's calling her to do that. Like there's clearly a difference there. But I mean, I don't think anything about that movie has aged well.
Yeah.
And now with this, it's like, I'm just despicable. I mean, I haven't actually seen the movie. But I've heard that it there aren't like any positive black characters in it. It's just like white savior.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they make him out to be like mentally defective or whatever. And then it's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, I feel like the only way that they can redeem themselves is to make a new movie about this very thing.
Blindside 2, right?
Blindside 2.
He becomes like the enforcer and yep. goes back to get revenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe Terry Crews. One by one.
Terry Crews plays him. Absolutely. Yeah. Blind and Blinder. Or what would be like the sequel? The Blinder Side? No. I don't know. But that's
like definitely something there. Could be his big tagline at the end when he finally catches Sandra Bullock and he's going to dispatch her. And he'd be like, yeah, didn't see it coming, did you?
Or like, that's his line at her funeral or something. And like, yeah, she didn't see it coming. Yeah. That's great. That's really funny.
Yeah, take out the blind side. I just love those stories when they actually come back around and you get the story behind the story behind the story. And it just mm-hmm. shifts the whole world. Like the whole moral universe suddenly goes, whoop, you know, and these guys who have been heroes suddenly become these massive villains. It'd be like Erin Brockovich. Turns out she put that chemicals in the water for 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of history like that, where for a long time, school kids were taught that Columbus was this wonderful guy, you know, and then you're like, oh no, he was awful. So, I mean,
I bet most historical characters, like if we actually went in and could really detail transparency behind the scenes of how they lived their lives and who they were, like they tried that with MLK, right? With the affairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, almost everybody has, again, the kind of character, you know, half dark, half light. But if you just tell the light, it opens it up to just, you can just pull one string and it just all tumbles. It's historically most famous people.
Yeah. But then it also seems like with JFK too, they're like, well, he was a philanderer. And you're like, I don't know if this is a bad light you're portraying, you know, where it's just almost like this James Bond thing of like meeting with Khrushchev and three-way in a closet. And you're like, well, is that both sides in it? I don't know. I mean, it still seems like you're kind of glamorizing.
Well, that was my whole thing about Tiger Woods, right? If he had not gotten married, he lives the best life ever for a, you know, a bro dude. He's banging porn stars. He's a billionaire. He's world famous. Everybody loves him. Just don't get married. Why would you possibly get married?
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the docuseries, the HBO one, like you can definitely tell his dad like screwed him up and I don't know, probably just for the story itself, where if you are like this rich, successful man and you reach a certain age, then the gay rumors are going to start. Like unless you're Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, I think you just have to lean in. If you are going to be the bachelor guy, then you just lean into it. Like he does, like George Clooney did up until he married the one international lawyer or whatever for a while. But like, you know, just be you, right? Just stop, like, you know, when you have trans people, like the bravery it takes to do that publicly, then like, it's a very small step to be like, you know what, I don't think I'm cut out for monogamy. I doubt the world, if Tiger Woods did that, would be like, shame on Tiger Woods.
I don't know. It's like, it's almost like they don't really think it through.
No, probably not.
You know, probably almost like not. They're living this crazy, you know, enjoyable life. And they're like, this will just keep going. I'll just keep doing this.
Well, and it's probably like Bill Burr's bit about Arnold Schwarzenegger when he finally got caught with the nanny or whatever. And people are like, well, how could he do? And it's like, this guy's been batting 1,000 forever. Like, he's got the most amazing life in the world. And so I would imagine that Tiger was probably a philanderer long before he got caught. And I'm sure they might've had some sort of Clintonian agreement of like, well, just don't throw it in my face. But then as the years go on and he doesn't get caught and he's just chasing more of a high and more of a high, that eventually, you know, it's all out in the open. And then the wife has to be like, well, I'm going to look like this weak piece of shit so now it's for sure done. But yeah, who knows?
All right. Well, we would be remiss if we get out of here without talking about the Trump indictment. Devil went down to Georgia and got caught by the tail.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get? You got Trump stuff. You got a take on that?
I do. Yeah, I have a bit on how he's collecting indictments like Pokemon now. So first was Porny Sore. That's the Stormy Daniels one. Spyzard at Mar-a-Lago. Riety Poo. I don't have a good Pokemon one for the Georgia one yet. But so I riff on that. And then about how we should have a monument in the U.S. now devoted to our most corrupt presidents called Mount Rushmore. and he would be up there with Harding and Nixon and Clinton.
Harding? What did Harding do?
Teapot Dome. He was he's a fun dive because he didn't really want to be president. And that's why he was like one of the most corrupt ones, because basically all the industrialists were like, well, let's just put Harding in there and he'll do whatever we want. We can pick the cabinet and stuff. And he did. And he was like gambling in office and he was corrupt as all get. And I'm pretty sure he died 2 years in. So the Teapot Dome thing was just leasing federal lands for oil drilling, essentially. And that was when it got so overt that there began to be calls for reform. But he wound up dying like the third year in. And then I forget who took over afterwards, because I think that was like 1920. I think it was before Coolidge, somewhere in there was in it. But he's a fun character. He definitely... You know, not exactly Lincoln, this guy, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, I thought the other day, like, I like doing the obscure things. Like, the thing about Napoleon that I like about it is that everybody has, like, 7 mega touch points of information about Napoleon, like Waterloo and Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know anything about, you know, him, really.
Yeah.
Which makes it a perfect thing to go back in underneath and start filling in details. Mm-hmm. And I thought about going after Millard Fillmore.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, just like I have this, you know, Jones for Millard Fillmore, and I just bring it up all the time. And like, how can you possibly not still be upset about Millard Fillmore?
I mean,
and just use him as my sort of Trump straw man.
Yeah. That could definitely be like a fun sketch too, if you do like black and white White House correspondence dinner for Millard Fillmore, and then you have everybody dressed like from that time frame, and you're just like the comic that was booked, and then just roasting him using references of the time and stuff. And
yeah, that would be fun. Like like I think historical presidents, that'd be like the
now that I, that is a great idea. Yeah, like correspondence dinners throughout history for the presidents. Yeah, that is a really good idea.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. That's fun.
Good sketch. Write that one up.
I will. I'm gonna jot that down now. That's a good idea, because you combine drunken history with Comedy Central roasts and sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, like, Millard Fillmore 1850 to 1853. So he only was 3 years. Did he die during the
That's the thing. You only ever remember the ones that were murdered, but a few of them died in office.
No, he took over from Zachary Taylor, who died in office.
Oh, okay.
So son of a bitch killed Zachary Taylor.
He wasn't even elected.
It's true. And wasn't reelected. So apparently people found out, you know, how rotten he really was.
Did Taylor, did he get reelected and then took over? Because was Taylor like one of those William Harrison guys? Like, was he only in office for like 6 months or a year?
Zachary Taylor served the 12th president from 1849 until his death in 1850.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, there you go.
I think he was from Louisville, where I'm from. Right? Isn't that Zach Taylor? Yeah, he's from Louisville because they kept talking about exhuming his body. You know, to prove that Fillmore killed him. He was supposedly poisoned.
Oh, really? You're not joking. That's a thing. Like they thought, yeah. That's very Roman. That's really fun. I like that a lot. That's some House of Cards stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Trump's our closest to, well, I guess, who would be our closest to Caligula? Would that be JFK?
Oh,
like,
man.
It's all hidden, but.
Well, sexually, maybe JFK, but I don't, you'd probably have to go back to one of these 1800s guys that could have got away with being like a real psychopath and no one would have known.
I wonder if you did that like a corrupt off or whatever, like Caligula versus Pope Innocent III. I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you just like went down the list, like, you know how they do those battle royals? Like, would a ninja beat a Roman gladiator?
Yeah. Or like if a bear fought a shark, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
More degenerate. Pope Innocent or Caligula?
Yeah, that would definitely, I'd watch that show for sure. I don't know if any former president compares to Caligula, but it definitely, that is one thing too. And it's like, what's the History Channel doing with the Ice Road Truckers, with the, you know, Making Swords show? Like, delve into some of these, we don't know anything about these guys. They could have been freaks and weirdos.
Yeah,
and
there's all sorts of crazy stuff back there. Like,
no one,
like,
no one knows.
Like, again, like you're talking about, like Napoleon getting slandered by the cartoonists. Apparently, yeah. That also happened to Caligula, right? Like, like a lot of that stuff was just complete fiction that was used to slander him to get him, you know, deposed.
That'd be so. In real life, he's just like this Jimmy Carter, like just a sweetheart, and he just makes like one catty remark to a woman or something, and it's like, oh, he's having orgies and drinking blood and chopping off heads and.
Now, there's a good rhetorical project. Can you turn Jimmy Carter, into a villain?
Man, you know, he's gonna beat hospice, this guy. Like this.
The only guy to ever get out of hospice.
Wow. Exactly. He couldn't beat Reagan, but he'll beat hospice. He will come out stronger than he went in.
He wins every race eventually.
Yeah.
Doesn't get reelected, but
re-elected,
yeah, those guys,
life.
Like I remember, like with Gandhi, the only slander I've ever heard on Gandhi was he slept with his 13-year-old niece, both of them naked, to test himself to see if he would have an erection, because he believed he completely destroyed any type of you know, earthly desires.
I mean, noble idea, I guess. The way he chose to carry it out,
he's an empiricist. That's the point. Mm-hmm. He needs actual proof.
This exact test was failed by Jerry Lee Lewis, I believe, in the early 1950s.
Yes, and probably half the male population before the 1950s.
Yes, that was to prove he could get an erection. I think he was trying to prove the opposite, and boy howdy did he come out on top in that. It's
great,
really funny.
Balls of fire.
Yeah, it's funny because like Elvis, because Jerry Lee Lewis at the top of the world, and he's like, hey everybody, this is my, yeah, you know, goes out with her, Mary, they do a little bit of reason, like, oh my god. And then Elvis, who was like all set to like, hey, this is Priscilla, was more like, let's just keep her away from the limelight for at least 3 or 4 more years, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different approach to pedophilia.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, there you go. Like, so what's your prediction for Trump?
I mean, there's no way. Well, I guess if he gets a sympathetic juror on there, maybe he's not convicted in all of them. I assume he'll be convicted in at least a few statistically. Like he's got there's the E. Jean Carroll defamation thing. So it's really like five trials he'll be juggling. I think he gets the nomination for sure. I don't think anyone stops him there. I don't know. Do you think he'll wind up in prison? I don't see him going to prison.
I can't see, like, he's a, you know, he's never been convicted of anything, right? So he has no prison. Yeah. He has no record.
Yeah.
So first time offender doesn't seem like that's a prison sentence.
I mean,
but it is treason. If yeah. They, you know, if they push it correctly.
I don't, as far as legally, I don't think it's likely he goes to prison. I think it's more than likely he gets convicted of a few of them, but then is it a fine? What is it? And he'll probably appeal and that'll go on. I'd like to think that the American people, especially with the whole year of him bouncing from trial to trial, and as long as Biden can keep it together for one more year, I think we'll get real. And then hopefully he just like peace outs after like a year or two and is like, okay, I'm out. And
yeah, I don't know what, you know, artificial organs they're going to put in him to keep him going, but he's not healthy. Right.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is like you almost watch it and just like as a human being, you want to be like, this is not how you should spend your last, you know, you're a grandpa. You're like, why are you letting everybody rip on you for staying in the. But I guess part of it, I would imagine, is just he's wanted this job his whole life. He finally has it now. I mean, if he does die, you get to die president. Like we haven't had that since like FDR, right? Like he'll go to bed president.
Think of the
we'll
boos.
Never know. Think of not being president.
Like, you know, the Gandhi funeral, there weren't people booing, right? Yeah. There was not a lot of booing at the Gandhi funeral. If Trump's funeral, it'll be at least half boos.
Yeah. I was about to say when Biden does die, whenever, especially if it's in office, I think you're gonna see like a complete, then he'll be like this elder statesman that, you know, helped Obama, helped the country. Like right now, it's like, oh, he's a piece of shit. He can't bring people to. And then like the second he dies, it'll be a complete 180 and he helped unite and help. But yeah, with Trump's, I mean, it'll be a party for everybody. The right's going to be like, woo, our boy celebration. And then the left will be like, thank God he's dead. So I don't think there's going to be any real mourning. I think there's going to be a celebration of life on the right. You know, like a Viking funeral, and then the left will be like, you know, dancing on the grave. But I think that'll be the common ground. It'll be the left will get to dance on his grave, but it's got to be to like Kenny Chesney, who's the guy that has the In a Small Town, that guy. It'd have to be to one of his songs, so the right likes it too. But then everybody gets to dance.
Have you heard the banjo guy song, the kind of MAGA banjo song that's out right now?
No.
It's also getting a bunch of play because in the middle of it, he basically takes shots at people on welfare, you know, obese people on welfare. And, you know, like it's a kind of, you know, it's this populist song, anti-rich man. It's called Rich Man North of Richmond, Richmond North of Richmond. So it's basically taking shots at the wealthy, good socialist, you know, that he is.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then he just suddenly out of nowhere just is like, and if you're eating, you know, 300 pounds and 5'3", I'd only be paying for your fudge rounds. And I'm like, dude, that's everybody around you.
I was about to say, there are a lot of fat country music fans that are going to feel targeted by that.
But the welfare, those are the fat ones that we got to villainize. So everybody just obesity, that's God's plan. But yeah. if we're paying for your cookies.
Yeah, it's not God's plan that you're poor. Or like, you know, if he's against the rich thing, but like it is, you know, your fat that's on you, but yeah.
Yeah. I saw a great meme about that. It's like, so you're going after the wealthy class, right? Like a good socialist.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you're taking shots at the poor, like a horrible capitalist. Like what? Make up your mind, dude.
How dare you not have money after these capitalist pigs take it from us and you need help? Why would you need help?
I wonder if there's that genre out that uses all that kind of Marxist language in a country music song.
I mean, yeah, you probably have to go back to like Woody Guthrie and like that's, I mean, unintentional, not intentional, unintentional kind of, yeah, early country.
Yeah, and somebody said that they made a it's like, hey, draw a line between this guy with his banjo and his Richmond song. all the way back to Woody Guthrie and, you know, people who are clearly singing for the values of the poverty class and the working class, not taking shots at people that are in the poverty class. So, but there's that sense of they don't really understand the concept of socialism match up pretty well with a lot of the concepts of, you know, working class blue collarism.
Yeah, there's probably, my guess is there's probably somebody in this guy's life that like bullied him and is fat and on welfare now, or his dad is like treated him like shit and is fat and on welfare. Like, I think to have a song like that and then just a complete like, what is this even doing in here, is probably like, I'm going to stick it to Phil in this part of the song.
Yeah, it's probably not social commentary, it's personal attack.
Yeah, I think part of it is just like that. I think it's base or the inception of it, the idea was like sticking it to the elites, the power brokers, the wealthy. But then he also has like this one real fat poor person he just can't stand and he's willing to set aside principles to stick it to this one fat, but he can't sing it. It can't be like, you know, screw you, Pete. He can't say that because everybody's like, well, who's the Pete he's talking about? But like,
yeah. Well, yeah. And I think like him earning it by making sure this person was on welfare. Like as soon as he described that character, I'm like, well, that was my Indiana meemaw. Like,
yeah, yeah.
5-3 cookies. Like, but then it's like she didn't pay for those cookies herself.
Yeah.
So. All right, man. It was super fun. I appreciate you jumping on here.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Yeah, good stuff. Get out there. Where are you next? You just did Acme, right?
I was at Acme in Minneapolis last week, September, I believe it's 8th and 9th, whatever that second Friday, Saturday is. I'm doing the DC Comedy Loft with my buddy Steve. And then the end of September, I think it's like 29th and 30th, I'm doing the Lounge at the End of the Universe in Boise.
Cool. So you feel like in Acme, that's got to feel like a comedy comfortable environment. You could just do whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, I try to do it wherever I'm at and then I can adjust accordingly based on, I mean, I've done enough shows where, okay, they're a little hostile to that. I can pivot and stuff, but I mean, the way I'm framing it now, I think I get most people on board for, so we'll see, but I try because some people are like, well, do you do like liberal jokes for conservative crowds and conservative? I'm like, I try to do that for the people that are in the audience that night. Like it's going to be different people. And so it's, you know, I'm not going up there calling Trump the devil. You're all retards for loving him. Like, that's not what I'm doing. I'm taking issues and joking about
that. Can you do that for me? Can you do one set where you just do full, totally anti-Trump and just do it and we'll tape it and you'll get some national attention from that.
That'll be my closing bit in the church. That'll be the dying for your sins special.
Yeah, Trump on the cross right next to Jesus. And they're talking to each other like, yeah, me too. You too. Yeah.
It was rigged. That election between you and who is it? Not Brutus. Was it Brutus? No. Who is the Barabbas? Barabbas. Yeah, Barabbas. It was rigged. It was rigged. You should have won that one.
Awesome. All right, man. Yeah. Well, everybody go out and see Robert Burrell. Check out his website. Very funny guy. I appreciate it. We will see you again on The Blast with Dr. Dan.